It's not only news, it's science breakthroughs. Tomorrow's technologies. Advanced medical techniques. It's a glimpse into the future where we discuss artificial intelligence, earth and energy, enhanced humans, future society, health and medicine, space, robots and machines. Welcome to Science Bites with Joe and Craig.
Today is Thursday, October 8, 2020. Cornell University's team of scientists developed a new robot, so small that it's invisible to the naked eye. They hope the robots will someday crawl around inside the human body and hunt for diseases.
The robots themselves are little more than microchips attached to four origami-inspired legs. The engineers can manufacture 1 million of the bots every week, each one steered by beaming a laser at its feet. This gives the team hopes that they'll become a useful medical tool in the future.
The team said the hardest part wasn't building a microscopic robot, but giving such a tiny machine a way to move around. Since there weren't any legs that would work at that scale and connect to the microchips, they invented a new technology that uses a laser to move them around.
So far, the team is celebrating the tiny robots as an achievement and development all of their own. But someday they hope they can serve as medical devices that root around for signs of disease.
The team imagines having these robots used for microsurgery. Simply injecting the robots, which will then track down bacteria or a tumor cell. Then they go and snip it up and destroy it.
Speaking of tiny things, we've spoken about how tiny particles of plastic increasingly coats the planet. Well, a growing number of scientists are exploring new ways to break it down to its core molecules so it's less damaging to the environment.
A team of scientists from the University of Portsmouth engineered an enzyme that could break down plastics faster than any other. There is still a lot of work to be done. This is an encouraging sign to curb the pileup of plastic waste.
The new enzyme can make its way through plastic 6 times faster than the previous plastic devouring enzyme. The researchers were surprised how well it worked, but it's still way too slow to be helpful at any meaningful scale.
To make the new enzyme, the team borrowed a trick from the biofuel industry, stitching 2 effective enzymes together to make one even more powerful than the other one.
It turns out that mixing a new enzyme called MHET in with existing plastic-eating enzyme PET speeds up the process twofold, and connecting the two triples their speed on top of that. Combined, they could someday serve as a basis of a much more effective plastic recycling program. It would be a wild invention if this process can be used in landfills to turn our garbage back into usable molecules.
And keeping up with the curbing of pollution around the world, airlines carried 4.3 billion passengers in 2018, an increase of 38 million compared to the year before.
That's a lot of people.
Yeah.
That may change. Last week, the aviation company ZeroAvia ran a successful flight test of its new hydrogen-powered passenger plane. The Piper M-class aircraft, which can seat up to 6, took off, flew in a loop around England's Cranfield Airport, and then safely landed. While it may be years before the aviation industry might adopt hydrogen fuel cells as its primary source of energy, the test is an encouraging proof of concept.
Hydrogen planes are attracting attention across the industry. Also, last week, the aerospace company Airbus announced 3 new designs of hydrogen aircrafts that it says could take flight by 2035.
If these new hydrogen planes really take off, pun intended, it could make for a much cleaner future. As of 2019, air travel was responsible for 2% of global carbon emissions, and skimming those greenhouse gases off the top could help our fight to slow down climate change.
As difficult as 2020 has been, the pandemic has cut global carbon emissions by 17%, according to the report published on May 19, 2020.
With everyone avoiding travel, the air is cleaner these days. Researchers say daily global carbon emissions fell about 1/6 during the coronavirus pandemic, but it's not really likely to last.
And you know, Craig, it didn't just cut down the carbon emissions during the pandemic time. Roadkill animal deaths fell in California, Idaho, Maine. A study found that the animals killed by cars dropped by 21 to 56%.
That's a lot.
Yeah, depending on their location from March to mid-April.
The reason for the decline was directly tied to the reduced number of motorists on our roadways. Traffic in the U.S. fell by 73% during peak lockdown, according to National Geographic. And I don't know, Joe, it may still be that way because so many people are working from home. Who knows if they will really go back to work?
Yeah, I think a lot of them are going to be stationed from their house.
Yeah,
that's
what I think.
It's going to be a major change, like we said before.
Yep.
Okay, time for a short break.
What makes a rainbow bend? Where does the universe end? To know the world from A to Z.
Discover science and technology.
Where is the dinosaur? What's on the ocean floor? To know the world from A to Z.
Astronomy, biology, chemistry, zoology. Science and technology.
It's fun, you'll see. Why is the sun so warm? What makes a winter storm? And what's a quadruped? Why is the planet Mars red? You'll find there's lots to know. And exploring as you go. To know the world from A to Z.
Discover science and technology. Astronomy, biology, chemistry, zoology. Science and technology. It's fun, you'll see.
A public service message from the National Science Foundation.
Welcome back. We knew eventually this would happen. The U.S. Space Force is already considering the possibility of launching the first troops into space and even establishing a lunar base.
Speaking at the Air Force's space conference, U.S. Space Commander leader John Shaw confirmed last Tuesday that at some point they may be operating a command center somewhere in the lunar environment or someplace else. For now, they plan to operate the base or bases autonomously if possible.
John Shaw gave two main reasons why the moon base is a long way off. For one, space isn't exactly the most livable place for humans. Second is how good are we getting at the robotic space? The best robots that humans created are probably satellites, either ones that explore other planets or operated within our own Earth's moon system.
Rather than having troops stationed on the moon, it's far more likely robots will do that job for the foreseeable future. A key note I found interesting is Shore stated that in the days and years to come, we would have an awful lot of automated and autonomous systems operating in Earth, lunar, and solar orbits doing national security space activity.
The Space Force is already studying whether it's possible to have a permanent military presence on the moon. Early this year, NASA joined up with the U.S. Space Force to study the fusion energy, which could be a solution to powering up the base.
I knew it was only a matter of time before we heard about a military moon base. It stands to reason to have one. I'd much rather see an international moon base on a grand scale with every country on Earth taking part in construction and sending inhabitants. Having a base would also mean protecting our species should something happen to the Earth, like a mega volcano blowing up.
Yeah, like Yellowstone National Park.
Yes, that very one. Yeah. In northwestern Wyoming, in the center of Yellowstone National Park, a bubbling caldera is the scar of a 640,000-year-old gargantuan volcanic eruption. The 3,472 square mile park encompassing the caldera is filled with geologic wonderlands of spouting geysers and bubbling pools, all ultimately driven by magma and superheated fluids churning in the rock below the surface.
Nora's Geyser Basin contains more than 500 hydrothermal features. For more than 20 years, the area larger than Chicago is inflating and deflating by several inches in erratic bursts.
Scientists used decades of satellite-based radar and GPS data of the basin to model what may have occurred below its surface. In the late 1990s, a body of magma intruded beneath Norris, and fluids trapped within the magma bubbled out and made their way through the rocky labyrinth above them. As the fluids got stuck and pressure built up, the ground would rise. When the fluids were able to escape elsewhere, the ground deflated. Today, magma-derived fluids could sit close to the surface, just a mile or so below the ground.
Records indicate that the last time the supervolcano erupted was 640,000 years ago. Scientists say it isn't likely to erupt anytime soon. The research explains why the Park Steamboat Geyser has been erupting at a record-breaking pace since March of 2018.
Norris Geyser Basin is Yellowstone's oldest thermal area, with evidence of thermal features going back 115,000 years. It's also the hottest, registering 459 degrees Fahrenheit, 8,000 feet or so below the surface.
The region's steamboat geyser demonstrates how quickly Yellowstone can change. The 400-foot-tall geyser has historically erupted infrequently, with gaps between major eruptions lasting between 4 days and a half a century. Since March 2018, Steamboat erupted as frequently as once a week. Its 32 eruptions in 2018 set a record that has broken in 2019 when the geyser erupted 48 times.
If another large caldera-forming eruption were to occur at Yellowstone, its effects would be worldwide. Such a giant eruption would have regional effects such as falling ash and changes to global climate. Those parts of the surrounding states of Montana, Idaho, and Wyoming would be affected by pyroclastic flows, while other places in the United States would be impacted by falling ash enough to collapse roofs, kill crops, and shut down power grids. In other words, it would be a true disaster of epic proportions.
Yellowstone is not all doom and gloom. The pristine national park has many inspiring features, and it also has something else that lurks in the Yellowstone lakes.
This part is really interesting. Microbiologist Thomas Brock was walking through Yellowstone in the 1960s when he stumbled upon a bacteria species that would transform medical science. Brock was investigating the tiny life forms that managed to eke out a living in the superheated waters of the park's thermal pools. There, he and a student found golden mats of stringy growth in Yellowstone's Mushroom Spring, containing a microbe that produces unusual heat-resistant enzymes.
Today, those enzymes are vital components in a method used around the world, studying samples of generic material by making millions of copies. Sometimes that would be impossible to do without the discovery of heat-resistant bacteria. The bacteria is currently being used in most of the available tests on the COVID-19.
The COVID-19 test uses the genetic material of the novel coronavirus, which is RNA. RNA encodes its genetic instructions in just a single strand. So the RNA of the virus is first converted to DNA. The test also includes a fluorescent tag that highlights the copies of the virus's genetic material in a nasal swab. The more copies that are made with the Yellowstone bacteria, the brighter the sample. Now that is pretty amazing stuff. Okay, we are taking a small break. When we return, we will have another quick bite for you.
We're building the next chapter of American exploration, returning to the moon to stay, so we can go beyond to Mars, to expand what's possible and further our understanding. The architecture for these missions is already taking shape. We will go with new systems, bold designs, and a sustainable mission. You can hear it, taste it, touch it. We are going. We are training, testing, pressing our pioneering spirit into every component, defining our resolve with every line of code, and securing our success with every welcomed partnership. This is not hypothetical. This is not about flags and footprints. This is about sustainable science and feeding forward the advance of the human spirit. Because we are the pioneers, the star sailors, the thinkers, the visionaries, the doers. And because we stand on the shoulders of giants to go farther than humanity has ever been, we will add our names to the rolls of the greatest adventurers in history. Every day, every mission, we advance this calling. We are NASA. And after 60 years, we're just getting started.
Welcome back. For 1,000 years, humans have gazed up at the stars and wondering, what are we like to journey to them? While sending astronauts beyond the solar system remains a distant dream, humanity has already launched 5 robotic probes that are on its path to interstellar space.
Each of these crafts was primarily designed to explore worlds in the outer solar system. But when they finished their jobs, their momentum continued to carry them further from the sun. Astronomers knew their ultimate fate was to live among the distant stars.
While engineers didn't think Pioneer 10 or 11 would last quite so long, scientists were always aware that the probe's path would take them out of the solar system. This is why they were equipped with their special plaques designed to introduce their creators as well as show their paths through space.
Pioneer 11 was redirected past Saturn after launch, so its plaque is inaccurate. The identical Pioneer plaques show a nude man and woman along with an orbital diagram of our solar system. NASA no longer gets signals from the Pioneer spacecraft, but if extraterrestrial life ever finds them, they should be able to deduce what our species looks like and where we're from.
Next, we have Voyager 1 and Voyager 2. They both carry a golden record designed to teach aliens about the human race. They also both remain in communication with NASA. Both spacecraft pass beyond the heliopause, the region where the sun's solar wind loses its sway. On August 25, 2012, Voyager 1 reached the heliopause and entered into interstellar space. Voyager 2 accomplished the same on November 5, 2018.
At Pluto, New Horizons found signs of ice volcanoes, giant mountains, and even liquid water ocean. Then the probe pushed into the depths of the Kuiper Belt, where it explored a primordial world of ice and rock that looks like two pancakes stuck together. Now New Horizons is continuing on in the footsteps of Pioneer and Voyager missions, as it's only the 5th spacecraft ever launched on a path that will take it out of the solar system. But unlike its interstellar spacecraft kin, New Horizons doesn't carry a plaque or a golden record designed to teach aliens about the human race. And that was intentional.
Well, that brings us to the close of another show. And you can find our shows on our website, MySciencebites.com, and on all podcast platforms.
We appreciate your continued support. Thanks again for listening, and we will be back next week with another brand new episode.